Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the sixth canto, chapter 4, entitled the Hangso Guyu Prayers, text number 5. Drume Bhyaha Guru Dhyamanas Te Tapo Dipita Manyavaha Mukato Vayum Agnin Cha Sasrejus Tad Didakashaya. Jumevya kurudyamanaste Tapodipita manyavaha Mukato vayum agningcha Sasrejus tadidakshaya Drumevya kurudyamanaste Tapodipita manyavaha Mukato vayum agningcha Sasrejus tadikasaya. Mataji's, please. Drumebhyaha, unto the trees. Krudyamanaha, being very angry. Te, they, the 10 sons of Pratini Bari. Tapakdipita manyavaha, whose anger was inflamed because of long austerities. Mukataha, from the mouth. Vayum, wind. Agnim, fire. Cha, and. Sasrajuhu, they created. Tat, those forests. Didakshaya, with a desire to burn. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Because of having undergone long austerities in the water, the pratetas were very angry at the trees. Desiring to burn them to ashes, they generated wind and fire from their mouths. Purport. Here the word tapo dipita manyavaha indicates that persons who have undergone severe austerities, tapasya, are endowed with great mystic power, as evinced by the pratetas, who created fire and wind from their mouths. Although devotees undergo severe tapasya, however, they are vimanyavaha, sadavaha, which means that they are never angry. They are always decorated with good qualities. Bhagavatam 3:25-21 states, Titikshava kurunika suridaksar vadehinam adata shatravak shantak sadavak sarubhushanaha. A sadhu, a devotee, is never angry. Actually, the real feature of devotees who undergo tapasya, austerity, is forgiveness. Although a Vaishnava has sufficient power in tapasya, he does not become angry when put into difficulty. If one undergoes tapasya but does not become a Vaishnava, however, one does not develop good qualities. For example, Hiranyakashipu and Ravana also performed great austerities, but they did so to demonstrate their demoniac tendencies. Vaishnavas must meet many opponents while preaching the glories of the Lord, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that they do not become angry while preaching. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this formula, Trinadapi sunichena taroripi sahishnuna amanina manidena kirtaniyak sadaharihi. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Those engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord should be humbler than the grass and more tolerant than a tree. Then they can preach the glories of the Lord without difficulty. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Agnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Putale Srimate Paladananda Swaintone Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Putale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaintone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Charani Nirvishesha Shunyavati Pashyati Adesha Charani. So first of all, I'd like to thank all the Vaishnavas for allowing me to speak. It's always a pleasure to serve the Vaishnavas in such a way. And I would also like to remember one text from the Adi Lila, 8th chapter, text 84. Rupa Raguna Charanera E Bala Yanre Smirte Siddhaya Vanchita Sakala. The lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Raghunath Das Goswami are my source of strength. Remembering their lotus feet can fulfill all one's desires. So, this verse is very nice. We're just now getting into the history of the Pratetas. The Pratetas were the sons of King Prachini Barishad. And they actually went to go meditate for many thousands of years. I think it was something like 10,000 years, wasn't it? Underneath the water. And before they went underneath the... I can't remember the exact history. But at some point they met Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave them these wonderful prayers to recite. In fact, I heard that even one great Vaishnav... more recently, Ramdas, when he was the head pujari here, when he would be waking up the deities every morning, he would recite these very prayers every single morning while he was getting everything ready in the pujari room. He would recite everything in Sanskrit, and then he would recite it again in English. And they're very, very beautiful prayers describing the glories of Krishna. And so these Pratetas were performing these austerities for an extraordinary amount of time. And when they were done with these austerities, they came out of the water and the land was overrun with trees. But not all trees that were useful. Many of them were useless trees. In other words, trees that didn't bear any fruits or flowers. And out of anger, because these trees were occupying all the land for agriculture, for farming, because the people didn't have enough land to cultivate food crops. So out of anger, the Pratetas burned all these trees. They were so angry, they wanted to burn all the trees. Just like when the son of Maharaj Parikshit, he was so angry that the snake bird came to kill his father, that he wanted to perform a sacrifice to kill all the snakes. But Soma, the controller of all the plants, he came to intercede on behalf of the plants. So this is one example of the types of potency or power that's generated through austerities. And there's many, many examples of different potencies generated from austerities. For instance, Kashyapa Muni. He and his wife, they were undergoing severe austerities for many, many years. But then, you know, he knew that at some point he had to give his wife some children. So in order to facilitate the process of bringing forth children, he manifested this giant palace so his wife would feel comfortable. But it wasn't just any ordinary palace. This palace was actually an entire city that could float in the air and take him anywhere he wanted by the power of his mind. And this was generated from his mystic powers, one of the byproducts of his tapasya, his austerities. Or as Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, there's Hiranyakashipu and Ravana. Hiranyakashipu, he was performing such severe austerities. He was standing on his tiptoes with his arms stretched above him for so many years that all the flesh of his body was eaten away. He'd been standing in one place for so long that ants had built a nest underneath him, and they had built the anthill growing up around his body, and they consumed all the flesh on his body. So all that was left was a skeleton. But Hiranyakashipu, he had invested all his life air inside the marrow of his bones. And so even though he was just a skeleton, he was still alive. And then when Lord Brahma came, because all the demigods were complaining of an extraordinary amount of heat being produced within the universe that was burning everyone. And they were complaining to Lord Brahma, you know, you got to find out where this heat's coming from. We're just getting scorched. So Lord Brahma went to where Hiranyakashipu was, but he couldn't see exactly where he was because he was completely covered over by an anthill. And so instead, he just went to the source of where the heat was. And then he saw the skeleton there. And so he poured a couple of drops from his water pot on top of Hiranyakashipu's skeleton, and all the flesh reappeared. His body was completely rejuvenated. And so Hiranyakashipu, because he's not a devotee, what did he ask for? He asked for immortality. He asked for unlimited material power. He couldn't be granted liberation because even Lord Brahma doesn't have that capability of granting that. So Hiranyakashipu, being a very clever demon, he asked for so many benedictions such that it would be virtually impossible for him to die. And he was thinking, I've outsmarted death. I've outsmarted Vishnu himself. Now I shall never be able to die. In other words, he was thinking that now I've become God. You know, or then there's Vrikasura. He was performing extremely severe austerities. He was cutting off his own flesh and offering it into the fire to Lord Shiva. And then when Lord Shiva wasn't coming to satisfy his desires, he bathed very nicely, washed his hair, and came before the fire and was about to chop off his own head, to offer his own head into the fire. So then Lord Shiva comes and he's saying, you know, why are you doing this useless austerity? You know, I'm satisfied just by some water. This is all completely unnecessary. But Vrikasura was such a rascal of a demon. He was performing these austerities because he was envious of Lord Shiva. He saw how beautiful Lord Shiva's wife was, Parvati. And he wanted Parvati for himself. So he asked for the benediction that whoever's head I touch with my hand, their head will immediately crack and they'll die. So Lord Shiva said, okay, sure, whatever. You know, just quit these silly austerities that you're doing. So Vrikasura, he thinks, oh, now is my perfect opportunity. Lord Shiva's right here. So he goes to touch Lord Shiva's head. And Lord Shiva, he runs in fear, because he knows the potency of his own power, because this power came from Lord Shiva, and he just gave a fraction of this to Vrikasura. So Vrikasura is chasing Lord Shiva all over the universe. And Lord Shiva is thinking, my God, what's going to happen? So then Lord Vishnu comes, because Lord Shiva is a very, very dear devotee to Lord Vishnu, Vaishnavanamita Shambhu. And Lord Vishnu comes as a brahmachari, dressed in saffron. And he asks Vrikasura, he says, oh, best of the demons, what are you doing here? What's going on? Why are you running around so wildly? And Vrikasura explains, well, you know, I was just given this wonderful benediction by Lord Shiva, that whoever's head I touch with my hand, their head will immediately crack into thousands of pieces. And this little brahmachari was saying, well, that sounds rather foolish. I mean, everyone knows that Lord Shiva, you know, he doesn't have any potency. He may claim to have been given you something, but I mean, who knows? Have you tried it yet? And Vrikasura says, well, no. So the little brahmachari says, well, what's the use in chasing after Lord Shiva if you don't even know that it even works? Why don't you try it out? Try it on your own head. Just put your hand on your head. See if it works. And so by Lord Vishnu's bewildering potency, Vrikasura he says, wow, what a great idea. Puts his hand on his head and immediately cracks into thousands of pieces. You know, so these are non-devotees. These are examples of people who aren't devotees of Krishna, and so they don't develop, as Prabhupada says in the purport here, the real feature of a devotee who undergoes tapasya, austerity, is forgiveness. For devotees who undergo austerities, what happens is the heart becomes soft. For non-devotees, when they undergo austerities, their heart becomes very hard. That's why Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he warns against engaging in unnecessary austerities. Because engaging in austerities will make the heart pure, eventually, but it gives the wrong quality to the heart. It makes the heart like gold. And gold is very hard. Gold is a solid. And it's very dense. It doesn't change very easily. You have to take it and hammer it with great strength, and then you can mold it into whatever shape you want. Devotees, they're not interested in having hearts made of metal. Srila Rupa Goswami says that for devotees, a devotee's heart is like ghee, or like a soft swab of cotton. Ghee is constantly flowing. Ghee is pure. There's no impurities in ghee. There's not even any moisture. So ghee never goes rotten. Just like the devotee's heart, it's never rotten. It's always pure. But a devotee's heart is always, it's always liquid. It's always flowing. So it makes the devotee very sensitive to whatever transcendental emotions are being felt through the loving reciprocation with Krishna. That's also why a cotton swab is used, a very delicate swab of cotton. Because when even the slightest hint of wind comes by, the cotton, it gets moved by the wind. So in the same way, the devotee's heart should be so soft, it should be so fragile, that even the slightest motion should capture and move the devotee's heart to compassion and forgiveness, mercy, tolerance, humility. All these great qualities, it's very difficult for them to manifest in the heart of somebody, you know, for instance, like a heart of gold. Because gold is very difficult to impress. It's very difficult to move. So that's why Srila Rupa Goswami cautions against engaging in unnecessary austerities. So elaborating a little bit on the verse that's quoted within the purport of today's verse from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 25, text 21. Prabhupada doesn't really list the translation. He just gives kind of a gist of the translation. He just says, a sadhu, a devotee, is never angry. The translation of that verse, the symptoms of sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He's peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and his characteristics are sublime. So, out of the mercy and the friendliness to all living entities described in this translation, this is why Prabhupada, in the purport to this particular verse, goes immediately into talking about preaching. Because this is the real quality that's developed through these different austerities. Devotional austerities develop not only forgiveness, but also compassion and mercy and friendliness. In other words, devotees are real well-wishers of the conditioned souls, of all the jivas. And they're willing to do whatever it takes to help them come to their ultimate benefit. Just like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that devotees should be prepared to shed, I forget how many gallons, but gallons of blood to share Krishna consciousness with people. Not shed other people's blood, to shed our own blood. Our own blood, sweat, and tears. Because this is real austerity. You know, that's why Prabhupada says that, he says elsewhere, that hearing and chanting, just like he quoted the verse, Trinada Pisu Niche Na, that is perhaps one of the most important verses of all the shastras to memorize, because by really understanding and imbibing this one verse, so many other things become unlocked. Becoming more humble than the grass, more tolerant than the tree. Then we can hear and chant the glories of the Lord constantly. And Prabhupada explains that this hearing and chanting, this is actually meditation. This is actually austerity. This is sacrifice, it's yajna. It's an austerity in this age of Kali to hear and chant about Krishna. Why is it an austerity? Because for the materially minded person, this is suffering, this is misery. Because we're not hearing and chanting about our own glories, about how to gratify our own senses. And it's sacrifice because we're sacrificing our time. We're sacrificing our attention. We're sacrificing all the other things that we could be doing. But at the same time, by engaging in these austerities, by engaging in this sacrifice, then we actually begin to come to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, where we can experience spiritual reality. Just like in the kirtan. You know, when we sacrifice all other desires, rather than being in the kirtan and thinking, oh, you know, I wish I could be here doing this thing, or, you know, I wonder what's going on over here, or, you know, I wonder what's on the TV, what about the game, or, you know, what's the latest on the internet, or, you know, whatever it is. There's so many different excuses why not to get into kirtan. Or even if we're in the kirtan, we may be taking things materially, like thinking, oh, you know, this isn't such a nice kirtan leader. He can't hold a tune. He's always out of key. His pitch is off. Or, you know, he can't keep his rhythm. Or, you know, so many material considerations. The real consideration is that the devotees are chanting the holy names. And to abandon all other ideas of what we want to do. And just surrender to what Krishna would like us to do. Which at that particular time is just chanting Hare Krishna with the other Vaishnavas for the pleasure of Krishna. And then when we surrender to this process, all bliss is there. Because that's directly spiritual activity. You know, so another thing also is that Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, which is why I just mentioned that quote from the CC earlier, because really the six Goswamis are just so incredible. Really, I highly recommend that everyone just try to spend a little time every day to meditate upon the wonderful transcendental qualities of the six Goswamis. Rigupati Prabhu is really the devotee that kind of turned me on to the Goswamis. But their mercy is just incomprehensible. You know, even like when I was preparing for class today, I was thinking, oh no, what am I going to be able to speak about? I was just at a loss. And then I remembered this verse from the CC. The lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami are my source of strength. By remembering their lotus feet, all one's desires can be fulfilled. And just by meditating upon the six Goswamis, my mind became clear. And then I had more direction for what to do, what direction to go in. And it's not just this, you know, but for anything, anytime we have any difficulty, anytime we need any sort of guidance, anytime we need any sort of inspiration or to feel enlivened, Krishna consciousness, to become freed from whatever material contaminations are corrupting our hearts, simply remembering the lotus feet of the six Goswamis will alleviate us from all these terrible symptoms of this material conditioning. So Raghunath Das Goswami specifically, he's a wonderful example of a devotee who engaged in severe austerities, but devotional austerities, austerities for Krishna. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he fully imbibed this mood of Kirtaniya Sadahari. You know, being more humble than the blade of grass, more tolerant than the tree. And so he was able to chant continually. That's why in the Shad Goswami Asakam, it said, Sankhya Purvakanam Agananatibi Kala Vasani Krito. The Sankhya Purvaka means maintaining a numerical strength. So the six Goswamis, they were keeping track of their rounds. It's not like they were just, you know, chanting ad lib and just however many rounds they did, that's just what they did. No, they were keeping a very strict count, a very strict numerical strength of rounds that they would do every single day. And not only for chanting their japa, but also for offering obeisances. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami would pay 1,000 obeisances every single day to the Vaishnavas. I don't know if any of you here, myself included, have ever done 1,000 obeisances. It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. I know one devotee who, he heard that some of the sadhus in Vrindavan, they offer 250 dandavats every single day as part of their bhajan. So he wanted to try it out, see what it was like. He didn't even make it past 100 before he was so exhausted that he had to rest for the rest of the day. Because paying obeisances, you know, it's like very intense physical activity. You know, and so Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he was performing 1,000 obeisances every single day. And he wasn't eating. He was, I think every other day, he was taking 3 drops of Charanamrita. His austerities were so severe. But the thing is, he was a pure devotee. His heart was soft and light like the cotton swab. He was all the time being, his heart was all the time constantly being moved in the mellows of devotional service. So it's explained that Srila Sanatana Goswami, he's the one who establishes, who gives us sambandha gyan, who helps us understand our relationship, sambandha, with Krishna. And then Srila Rupa Goswami, he's the one who shows the path of how to attain the goal, abhideya. And then Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he's the one who exemplifies by his character prayojana, or the end result, what's possible. And so Srila Raghunath Das Goswami's austerities, they weren't hindering his devotional service. So if any devotees care to perform austerities, it is recommended. It's not discouraged in the slightest. But this is the test. If our devotional austerities enhance and increase our devotion, what service we can render to Krishna, Guru and Krishna, then those austerities are beneficial for our Krishna consciousness. But if we're performing some severe austerities and then our service becomes slackened, our enthusiasm for devotional service wanes, our anger increases, then these are non-devotional austerities and they should be ended immediately. So we're just about out of time. It's 8:15 right now. If there's any comments or questions. Jai. Granth Rashi Mad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Rupa Ki Jai.